The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. Well, coming up later in the show, we're going to hear my interview with Ngayo Bilom, comedian, activist, journalist, a genius. Remember that word. That'll be coming up later in the show. We're also going to hear some words from Angela May. She is chief of the UNODC Research and Trend Analysis Branch, United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime. She spoke at the Commission on Narcotic Drugs intersessional meeting, which occurred on January 16th. But first, on December 18th, the National Institute on Drug Abuse and the Institute for Social Research released the results of the 2018 Monitoring the Future survey. They held a news conference to discuss those results, so we're going to hear some parts of that now. The speakers will include Richard Meek, PhD, principal investigator at the Institute for Social Research at the University of Michigan. Lloyd Johnston, PhD, he's the Angus Campbell Collegiate Research Professor at the Institute for Social Research at the University of Michigan. And the first speaker, the next voice you hear, will be that of Nora Volkoff, MD. She is the director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse.
I'd like to start with good news, which is actually we are continuing to see some of the lowest rates of illicit substance use among teenagers in our country, as well as some of the lowest rates of licit substance use, that is nicotine and alcohol, among teenagers. And some of those reductions are particularly dramatic in the light of the fact that we are amidst an opioid crisis, where the use and consumption of opioids is continue to increase, and yet we are seeing some of the lowest rates of consumption of prescription opioids, as well as heroin that we have seen since the survey was initiated. So that's quite important. Item number two, though, is what are the areas of concern, and you will hear further from the principal investigators. But the main area of concern is how rapidly teenagers have embraced the use of vaping devices to actually administer different types of drugs. And some of these increases are actually quite dramatic, whereas in 2017, most of the teenagers reported that they were vaping for the use of just a flavor. This year, we see that most of the teenagers are reporting that they are using of nicotine. So how large are these increases? Well, in some instances, they are actually more than double the consumption of substances through these devices. We are seeing teenagers reporting, 12 graders, that 30% of them in the past year had vape nicotine, which is, of course, of great concern due to the fact that many of the advances that have been done towards decreasing smoking among teenagers may now be, there is concern that some of them may be lost. As teenagers become addicted to nicotine, they may then transition into combustible tobacco. Similarly, these vaping devices there's been increased use for the consumption of 9-THC, which is the active ingredient of marijuana. So more teenagers are seeing, not as dramatic as for nicotine, but 30% increases in consumption of cannabis through these devices. And this is a new technology that may in the future also be utilized to administer other types of drugs. And then the third notable aspect about in this new data is that despite also significant increases in marijuana consumption across all ages, we're not seeing it in adolescents. And in fact, the prevalence rate of smoking marijuana has been very, very stable. And this year for regular marijuana is close to 6%, and it has been at that level for the past 4 or 5 years. So even though the rest of the illicit substances are going down, we're not seeing decreases in marijuana, but we are not seeing increases. And so there is something going on that appears to be protecting teenagers against the use of drugs, which brings me to my last point. I mentioned that it was notable that we're seeing very low rates of opioid prescription and heroin use among teenagers. Yet if we look at the epidemiology of the utilization of these drugs in young adults, we see the highest rates of opioid utilization among those that are 18 to 24 years of age. So we see this transition of where there's very low rate of use of opioids among teenagers, and then as they transition into young adulthood, those rates goes up, highlighting the transition from adolescence into young adulthood as one of vulnerability for opioid experimentation, misuse, and also, unfortunately, overdoses. So they are good news. They are worrisome news with the vaping that you will hear more details. And then there's the recognition that while there may be something that is providing resilience on teenagers, this appears to be lost as they transition into young adulthood.
But perhaps the main finding this year has been the startling increase in nicotine vaping. So as Nora mentioned, it's doubled in 12th grade from 11% to 21%. So that may not mean much to many people. So there's other ways to look at that same increase. One way to look at it is that Monitoring the Future has been in business for 44 years. We've reported increases for 43 of those years. We couldn't report an increase the first year because there was no comparison here. We've reported more than 1,000 increases over the past 43 years on the various drugs that we survey. And this is by far the largest we've ever seen out of these 1,000 increases that we reported for past 30-day use. In fact, the second largest increase was only half as large as what we saw in nicotine vaping this year. The second largest increase was in marijuana use from 1975 to 1976. So this is a really big increase. It's historic shift, actually. It's one of the largest we've ever seen in the past 43 years. So I wanted to emphasize the size, the magnitude of this increase. Also, we found that, as Nora pointed out, there was also a significant increase in marijuana vaping. So to date, marijuana vaping has been pretty rare. Maybe 4 or 5% of adolescents report that they did that in the past 30 days. But that increased 50% in 10th grade and 12th grade to about 7%. In 8th grade, it's a little bit smaller. It's part of a general pattern where pretty much all illegal drug use among adolescents has been increasing or staying steady, except if you can vape it. Anything that can be vaped, it doesn't matter. It goes up. So nicotine vaping went up. Marijuana vaping went up. We asked kids if they vaped just flavoring. That went up too. So something about this delivery device of vaping seems to really appeal to kids. Of course, there's the flavors, I think, are a large part of that, as well the concealability. Some of these vaping devices are shaped like flash drives and can be kept in your pocket, and you just suck on them, and they start up. There's no on and off switch. They're very convenient. You can just use them whenever you want. So given the ease and the concealability and the flavors, these all seem to be contributing to the great popularity of vaping among adolescents today.
As you've heard from Professor Miek, the key finding this year is in vaping. But there's been some other interesting things going on. Dr. Volkoff has alluded to some of those. I want to go into them a little bit. One is that we have seen since the mid-90s a dramatic decline in cigarette smoking by adolescents. 30-day prevalence and daily prevalence of smoking in all three grades is down by 80 to 90%. That means that we're going to have cohorts of young people who will have longer lives, less disease, and it's going to hopefully transfer to future cohorts that are coming through. Because this has happened so incrementally, I'm not sure that really the public knows about this, that we've made so much progress on cigarettes. And of course, that's one of the reasons we're concerned about vaping, because it has the potential to reverse that tremendous accomplishment. We know that all other forms of tobacco that we're tracking, and there are many, have edged lower this year. Most of them are down significantly over recent years, but not in 2018. But despite this, there was a considerable increase in the proportion of 12th graders who are using nicotine in the past 30 days. And that's up, as Dr. Volkoff mentioned, about 5 percentage points. So that's almost all due to the vaping, because the tobacco products are all in decline.
That was part of a news conference announcing the results of the 2018 Monitoring the Future survey. You just heard Nora Volkoff, the MD, director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse; Richard Miek, PhD, principal investigator at the Institute for Social Research, University of Michigan; and Lloyd Johnston, PhD, Angus Campbell Collegiate Research Professor at the Institute for Social Research at the University of Michigan. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Now, from the national to the international, let's go to Angela May. She's the chief of the UNODC Research and Trend Analysis Branch, stationed in Vienna, Austria. She was speaking at a Commission on Narcotic Drugs intersessional meeting January 16th. The CND held a series of meetings that week. The only part of that which was webcast was the meeting on January 16th. Again, those are only webcast live. The Commission on Narcotic Drugs works hard to maintain the opacity of the international drug control apparatus, and as a result, there is no archive of Commission on Narcotic Drugs meetings, none of their proceedings. The 62nd annual session of the Commission on Narcotic Drugs is coming up in March. This set of intersessional meetings were to prepare for what's coming up in March. Here's Angela May.
Yes, very sure. I have just three maybe updates because I'm not sure then if there's any other questions or whatever you would like to know or discuss. So one, just an update on where we are with the work on responding to the CND resolution in reviewing the existing data collection. So we are planning on July 8 to 10, July, an expert consultation to follow the expert consultation that we had last year. Basically, the idea is to invite national experts to now take the recommendations that were made in the first expert consultation and to see how concretely this recommendation could translate in terms of concrete capacity building activities. The expert consultation also was had kind of a two main agenda item. One was on the capacity building, and the other one on the RQ review, and so to have in preparation of that expert consultation, we will work in UNODC to prepare a draft that on these two different agenda items that reflect, basically take on board and implement the recommendations made at the first expert consultation. The other just piece of information is that as UNODC, we have submitted a paper to the UN Statistical Commission on drug statistics, and the item should be for discussion at the Statistical Commission. The paper should be out soon after the editing in the UN Statistical Commission website. But basically, in the paper, we recall all what happened in Vienna, in the CND. We mentioned that the importance of the CND in 2019. And basically, is for the Statistical Commission to discuss how the Statistical Commission can support the CND with their statistical expertise on addressing both of the CND resolution and that then was also reflected in the General Assembly resolution, on how to go about it. And for example, one of the suggestions is that in the expert consultation that we are going to have in July, whether the Statistical Commission was, the experts, national expert from the Statistical Commission would like also to be included again to benefit from the statistical expertise. The other piece of information is that, as you know, we have heard a lot, also many countries discussing the relevance of SDG indicators for the drugs. And so what we have been doing from UNODC is to try to promote that agencies that collect the SDG, they are responsible for the reporting of the global reporting of SDG indicators that are relevant to drug use, for example, issue like employment, education, where would be good that they could disaggregate the data also by drug use. Because this to complement also the work that we are doing with ARQ, because in the spirit of many member states, of course, saying that we should avoid duplication in data reporting, etc., we are not going now in UNODC now to start collecting indicator on employment or education attainment or those kind of things, because these are the responsibility of other agencies. So the group that oversees all the global reporting of SDG indicators has a subgroup on disaggregation, and they have recently made a call to agencies to submit proposal for considering the disaggregation of SDG indicators. So as UNODC, we have submitted a proposal for this group that for certain SDG indicators that are relevant for the drug problem, that they can consider the disaggregation of people that use drugs and they don't use drugs. So that to have this complementary data collection system within the UN that also deal with drugs.
That was Angela May, Director of Research at the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime. She was speaking at an intersessional meeting of the Commission on Narcotic Drugs. The CND holds its next annual session March 18th through 22nd of this year. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Earlier this week, I had a chance to speak to my friend Ngayo Bilom, the comedian, the journalist, and the genius. The genius, the word is genius. You'll understand. Let's just hear that interview. And so I can say that I'm on the line now with my good friend, the comedian, the writer, the genius, the activist, and all that kind of stuff.
The jankiest? No, I'm kidding.
Never.
I'm here with the jankiest, Ngayo Bilom. The dank diplomat, the weed whisperer. I got a lot of nicknames these days.
You got all that stuff. And you're, you know, an activist as well as being an entertainer, as well as being a celeb, well, you're just a cool person.
And weed celebrity. I'm well known.
Yeah. And a political activist and a thinker, too. People tend to forget that some of the best comedians have a political side. It's a political edge.
What's secret, right? This, the court jester gets away with saying all kind of crazy because he couches it in a joke.
Absolutely. The comedian, the jester, those are the people who can speak truth to power. And that's one of the reasons they're getting someone like you on, because we need people to speak truth once in a while.
Well, let's see how it goes.
Hey. So
I'll try to be truthful.
So I got you on the line. I got to ask just a few things. Obviously, California's marijuana is the big news topic. You've got the newest final set of regulations that have come out from the state, replacing the last set of final regulations that had come out from the state, I think replaced the one before that. You've got counties all over where people can't get weed. You've got places where – what's going on down there?
It's just one of those things where the people who hate weed are always going to hate weed, at least for now. It takes a long time, I think, to fight more than almost 100 years of propaganda, right? So we have dry counties and wet counties. It's like booze in some ways. But the challenge is, of course, the people who had businesses under Prop 215, under the medical marijuana law, where maybe you could have a business in Fresno, you know, you could still grow weed in Modesto or Placerville and still have a business. Those guys are kind of out right now, right? Because you can't get a license from that county or from that city. And there's, I think last time I read something, was like 75% of the counties in California don't allow any sort of cannabis-based business. And so that's creating a lot of challenges for the people who have been in the game for a long time and aren't getting a chance to take advantage. Also, let's see if I can remember what I was going to say. the state is trying to take steps, right? So they're allowing delivery even in counties and cities where cannabis businesses aren't allowed, if you're in Oakland or Alameda County and you want to deliver out to Contra Costa County, that's fine. Contra Costa County is trying to fight that. But that's okay. And that's good because it doesn't make any sense. A friend of mine said once, you know, when you create regulations for cannabis, you're only creating regulations for legal cannabis. You're not doing jack all about the underground market or the gray market, or as I like to call it now, the traditional market. And so if California is serious about having just people just buy weed from clubs and from delivery services and from dispensaries, then they're going to have to do more to create more opportunities for the old school growers, create lower prices, create lower taxes. The taxes on weed up here, 25-30%. The weed man's not charging you tax, right? You can get weed from the weed man for $30-$40 an eighth, no taxes. And when you go to the club, it's $40-$50 an eighth plus another 20% tax. And so they're kind of shooting themselves in the foot. Now, the challenge, of course, is you maybe don't want to end up like Oregon, where you can buy an ounce of weed for $40, which is really, really cheap. And it makes it harder for the smaller growers to compete. I mean, what was it? They have 1 million pounds of weed left over from last year that they haven't had a chance to finish, or nobody's going to get a chance to smoke in Oregon. And that's a different. I mean, but I would prefer that. I would prefer more of a free-for-all and everybody getting a chance to get into the business than this prohibition through overregulation, which is what's happening in California.
For what it's worth, the $40 ounces in Oregon are not that good. I mean, if you want decent weed, you're still going to have to pay a couple hundred at any of these shops.
But as opposed to $500 an ounce in California.
Well, exactly. It's only so you're still a deal.
Listen, it's probably cheaper for me to drive to Oregon and buy a ton of weed and come back and smoke it than to buy weed at a dispensary in California. And I live 7 hours or 6 hours and change from the Oregon border.
Far be it from me to encourage you to violate a federal law by crossing state lines.
I would never violate a federal law by crossing a state line.
Heavens no. That's back in the old
heavens.
Days.
Heavens. God forfend, sir.
Oh, we were just talking about that. On Twitter, there's the whole thing, Aaron Sorkin being, and guy gets busted back in 2001 carrying shrooms and ecstasy in his carry-on bag. And it's like, dude, no one was getting searched that every, we didn't have body scanners, small mess, just body pack it for God's sake. And nobody ever got busted. You do stuff like that. You know, it's either special, stupid, or just.
Confused as to what you do. I mean, listen, I know people, I've carried weed. I mean, not like a pound and a half or an ounce or whatever, but a personal amount of weed at the airport, they're not going to sweat you. Now, a personal amount of mushrooms and ecstasy, those are felonies. Those aren't misdemeanors. It's a whole different ball of wax.
But back in
Be careful with all your break.
Oh, absolutely. The thing is, back in the before the body scanner days, body packing was, yeah. I mean, you know, just plastic, as long as it was going to smell like a crotch, but. You know,
I used to have a whole set of jokes about who was it? It was Damon Stoudemire, former Portland Trailblazer, got arrested in Arizona for wrapping his weed in foil when he went through the metal detector. And I was like, man, you got to be dumb. It's a metal detector. The whole point of it is to detect metal. It wasn't a weed detector. They didn't detect the weed. They detected the metal you had it wrapped in. Everybody knows you put it in a plastic bag, tuck it under your junk, you get on the plane. It's a very simple concept.
You know, exactly. Exactly.
Exactly. Exactly. The old days fly.
Yeah, but the old days. Well, anyway. Okay, there's California out of the way. You got stuff to get to, so I'm going to ask you the more important part right now. Tell me, you've got a new show on YouTube. What's going on?
We just started a new show on YouTube, me and my good friend Olivia Monahan. It's called Stay High. And every week we're going to bring you different strain reviews, and we'll probably do a few dab reviews or two as well. And we'll show off some fancy gear. and all that good stuff. And each episode's only like 4 minutes and 20 seconds long or something like that. So it's really easy and fun to watch. And we stare at the weed and we smell it and we discuss flavor profiles and tastes and effects. And it's very funny and it's a good time. And you can find one on my YouTube channel right now, NGAIO420. You can find the pilot we shot. And we're shooting a bunch more today. And so we're going to start releasing them once a week in February. We get them all chopped and screwed, as they say.
Very cool. I saw the first, I saw your first one, the pilot, and it's great. And I'm looking forward to the, now, you had the, Cooking on High, which, which was a Netflix show. And, I don't know. How can I say this? Ditch the pretty boy. Okay. I mean, host the, look, he could read his lines fine off the auto cue, but, put you in as host. But you and his host have people banter.
Well, the director of that show.
Then I'm speaking to the producer and the director. Put Ngayo in as host. Get rid of the pretty boy. This is not. I mean, you got no. You're just missing the point with. They're missing it. That's want a good show. Put you in as host. Boom.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
God, that's just. That wasn't, I'm not even at the compliment stage yet. That's just common sense. My God.
Thank you.
No, you need somebody who knows what they're talking about and is interesting and lively as opposed, you know, male models. God, that's so 2005. I mean, sorry.
They produced it in LA. These things out.
That's true. Everything is 2005 in LA.
Yeah.
So you've got some shows to go and you got some acting to
shows
do.
Shows right
things.
Now. I got to get my outfits and my weed together, and then we're going to be doing that all day today. Shoot like 4 episodes, so I expect to be pretty tired around 7 o'clock tonight, but feeling pretty good.
Very cool.
So everybody watch that. Follow me on all the social medias. NGAIO420 is the handle. NGAIO420. And then if you live in California, I got a new line of pre-rolls coming out in about a month.
Most excellent. Any closing thoughts for the listeners?
I would quote Bill and Ted when I say be excellent to each other. And I would also like to say don't let the bastards get you down. And I would also like to say it is my fervent wish and hope that the cannabis growers of Oregon get to sell their excess weed to Germany and Canada.
And on that, excellent note, Ngayo 420, Ngayo Belem, thank you so, Ngayo 420, yeah, that's your handle. Ngayo Belem, thank you so very much.
There's 419 other Ngayos, is why I had to pick that one.
It's a long line, but. You
know. Thanks, Doug. Have a wonderful day, man.
You too, brother.
I'll talk to you later. Bye.
That was my interview with the genius who is Ngayo Belem, comedian, journalist, activist, and a good friend. And that's all the time we have for this week. I want to thank you for joining us. You have been listening to Century of Lies. We're a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network, on the web at drugtruth.net. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. The executive producer of the Drug Truth Network is Dean Becker. Drug Truth Network programs are available by podcast. The URLs to subscribe are on the network homepage at drugtruth.net. Drug Truth Network has a Facebook page. Please give it a like. Drug War Facts has a Facebook page, too. Please give it a like. Share it with friends. Remember, knowledge is power. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh, and of course also at Drug Policy Facts. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy reform and the failed war on drugs. For now, for the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.